Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. This time on Those Conspiracy Guys, True Crime, we're talking about J.C. Lee Dugard. We are Those Conspiracy Guys. I'm Gordo.
And I'm Steve.
We have Steve with us today. Father, lover, toucher of penis, and...
Flicker of beans.
And he is joining us today. We're talking about J.C. Lee Dugard. We just got back from the radio station where we were doing it on Spin FM.
Yes.
That's where you would have heard it. If you're joining us from Spin, welcome. Hope you liked what we did on the radio, and it wasn't defamatory in any way to anybody. Steve, we were looking at J.C. Lee Dugard. We're going to get straight into it, no kissing. And if anything we bring up in the show tickles your fancy, you have a correction, or you just want to get in contact with us, you can get onto our email, info@thoseconspiracyguys.com. You can get us on Facebook or Twitter. Facebook, we're Those Conspiracy Guys. Twitter, unfortunately, there wasn't enough room for the hoes, so we're just T Conspiracy Guys. And we're on everything else, Pinterest, Instagram, Reddit. We also have videos, and there will be accompanying videos for this on YouTube, VidMe, and we will be doing live streams from Twitch. At the moment, we're live streaming out to Discord, to our Patreon folks. Hello, all the people out in Patreon land. Thanks for joining in. You guys make the show what it is. If you want to support this show, head to patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys and you'll see what all the fuss is about. So just like to welcome in some of the guys here, including Gord from the podcast The Smoking Light Gun, which should be launching into your ear holes quite soon. And it's about conspiracy theories and computer games. And we will be talking, or we may have talked in the past, depending on when this is released, to Paul and Jerry from Not Another Fake Newscast. If you want to get your fake news well-researched and very contemporary, head over and listen to them. That's all the shout-outs and all the shilling. So welcome to the show. Steve, J.C. Lee Dugard, face melting.
Yes, indeed. A horrible story.
Inexplicable.
It is weird that such a thing could happen in... Like, in the early 90s, you think people are sort of well up on... You think people would be kind of on their guard for shit going down. But this, like... The June 10th, 1991, in South Lake Tahoe, California, sort of a kind of a modern place.
Will be modern enough,
young J.C. Lee Dugard is just kidnapped on her way to school in full sight of her stepfather.
Probin. It's
Carl Probin.
It's such a weird
name.
Situation.
Such a weird name.
Yeah, Probin.
Carl Probin.
What are you probing? It's so weird, though, that, like, in 1991, that... Somebody can be plucked from the street.
Yep.
Child can be plucked from the street and never seen again. And yet, this year so far, and even last year there was numbers released for the amount of kids and young boys going missing in the Washington, D.C. area. And it was a frightening amount.
Yeah.
Frightening amount.
And it's weird because you see ads on the radio and the TV for like GPS trackers for if you lose your bike or your phone. And never if you lose your kids.
Yeah.
You can fucking stick one of these tiles on them and you can catch them wherever you want.
It could be a thing where they're trying to lowjack kids, get one of those implants put under the subdermal, under the skin, that is, for those who don't speak Latin.
You wouldn't know. So, all these kidnaps is what, like a false flag?
No.
People think better about getting a chip implanted under skin?
Come on, man. Nobody kidnaps a kid for nothing. Like
speak for yourself.
Listen, kidnapping a kid is his own reward. Yeah. Whatever you want to do with it, then you get to throw it away like an apple.
Yeah.
That's, you know, ask the McCanns, they know the crack. So I'm saying that like it's causing an atmosphere of fear and foreboding and doom. And you always see on Facebook now they have these paranoia as well. You have these kind of things where, like, on Facebook, people put these things up and go, in my day, we only came in when the streetlights went on, and we only did this, and we only did that.
We never locked our doors.
We never locked our doors, and we, you know, we could fuck our kids, and the cops would never catch us. But now you have, like, such snowflakey, kind of mollycoddled kids, you know, and they seem somewhat softer, but less fucked up the bum. Do you know, it's kind of a trade-off of, do you want, like, loads of kidnapped and sexually abused kids, and then...
It's like you have the butt hurt without the hurt butts.
Yeah.
Basically.
Maybe they're looking for that butt hurt. There's something intrinsic in a certain percentage of kids need to be kidnapped.
Maybe we need kidnapped. Maybe we need, like, a Freddy Krueger prowling the streets just to keep everybody honest.
It's like a eugenics type of thing. It's like a...
Yeah, because I mean,
it's a natural selection.
Like, take Ireland, for example. There's no natural predators in Ireland except for, say, priests. But there's no natural predators in Ireland like wolves or bears. And for the most part, we're a bunch of pissheads who just, you know, wherever we land is where we sleep.
Yeah.
Basically. But if there was wolves and bears.
With no regard for our own safety, yeah.
If there was wolves and bears and coyotes and stuff like that. Or snakes.
St. Patrick turned Ireland into an irresponsible load of street drunkards.
Exactly. Because nothing's going to eat us if we're just lying down on the road.
This is it. Well, but in all seriousness, though, Paul from... Paul from the Discord services, it's character building. It is.
Yeah.
I think it is. But in all seriousness, when you're talking about kidnapping and then, like, habitually raping kids over a period of years, it's not as rare as you would think. Now, this is quite a rare case. JC Lee Dugard gone missing from South California, and she was gone for 18 years and reappeared relatively okay.
Yeah.
I mean, on the outside... Okay, probably not great on the inside in the brain box. A lot of therapy needed. But she came out of it like a reasonably well-balanced person.
She seems like she came through it as a champ.
Yeah. And there's a thing of like, these people are, nowadays, these kids are being sheltered by their parents. And there's a lot of helicopter parenting and a lot of very like closely watched stuff. Like when I was a kid, it was just like, bye. And you slammed the door. Am I mad? See me again before the sun went down. And if she didn't, she just, you know, it's like that Ace Ventura is like, I'll be back in 5 minutes. If I'm not back in 5 minutes, just wait longer.
Yeah.
Like, but when I got back late, if it wasn't back the time I was supposed to come back, I got a lick of a length of a wavin pipe on the back of my legs. And that meant that I wouldn't go. It wouldn't be like I had to go to counseling and shit and go, what, where were you? And what happened? What did you see? Like, it's.
Like, even yesterday, I was out on the street with my son's just coming up on 3, and he was out playing the road with loads of kids, and that was fine. I was about 11 foot away from him, and loads of kids, it was like 9 or 10 kids, they all went into this house, and the house is like the house of 15 kids. And they all just went in, and they were coming back out with toys, but my son disappeared for about a minute, and I was
shitting.
I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I was actually listening to... JC Lee Dugard podcast.
That's probably
like,
why.
So I'm like, what the fuck? And I was nearly sprinting down the drive, but I can't sprint. I'm hefty. But I was like, I was starting to walk towards the house like Liam Neeson, ready to fucking just start snapping kids and throwing them away. And then he reappeared carrying like a kitchen. And I was like, what the fuck? But in that moment, I was like, I couldn't see him for like 15, 20 seconds. I was like, what the fuck? Somebody's fucking him.
Do you think our parents were like that though? Do you think our parents were like, if they didn't see us, that it was like adder grad?
I mean, look, I was told before by my mum that we all just went out on the road. We used to go up there. Used to be all fields at the back of our house. And we used to just ramble up the fields like a summer's morning. You'd pack a lunch and a big bottle of Kiora and you'd F off up into the farmer's fields or up to the canal.
Yeah.
So long as there was somebody tall with you, my mum said you were grand.
Yeah.
Me and my brother were nearly killed by a half-dead junkie who was found lying in some stingers. And he tried to get us. He was crawling after us on his hands.
And some nettles.
Yeah, and just, because he wanted some Kiora. Junkies are mad for Kiora. But he was chasing after us like a fucking half-eaten zombie. And we were like, what the fuck? We found a shrine up in the middle of the woods with porno mags, a knife, and rosemary beads. They're nice.
It's the great lamb.
Yeah. And rosemary beads. And... mad shit was going on up there. People setting fires. We were shot up by farmers and stuff like that. And we'd come back and say we were shot up by a farmer. And we were told, well, don't be going to the farmer's field.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it'd be like, all right, well, we're going to call the police. We're going to get an investigation. How did you feel about being shot? Do you want to go to counselling? That kind of stuff. You know, I think we're the kids that we're raising today are a little bit softer.
There's no sense of great responsibility or autonomy or yeah. the ability to complete tasks or be on their own or yeah. be separate.
That and everyone's face is buried in a phone.
Yeah, but it's always about the connectivity yeah. and how you feel and stuff. Rather than years ago, it was like, you know, there's no coming of age movies about like four kids going on like an inner city transit train and all being on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's just not an hour and a half of that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we're going to fucking sing some songs from the day and skip around and get yeah. chased by a dog in a junkyard and then poke a dead kid in the eye with a big stick
yeah,
and then get like almost like violently assaulted by a bunch of older kids.
Yeah, there's no Judgment Night anymore for the young kids. There's no movie like where a bunch of snowflakes these days have to kind of get from inner city New York back to their home out in the suburbs. There's no Keyboard Warriors to watch, you know. It's just
millennials come out to play. Like, it's not, you know? Yeah, it yeah. isn't. It's weird. There are like situations in Ireland where kids were taken and raped, but not like yeah. kept for 18 years, because there's no need to keep them, because then you have to feed them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All you have to do is just get them into the altar boy kind of yeah. movement, you know, and come on in, like, into the organization of altar boys, and you can like sleep at home and get fed at home and all. Yeah. But this is, you get raped here.
We outsourced our rape to the Catholic Church, like. Yeah. Yeah.
Like rape cattle. But it just seems like, and we're not taking this lightly, it's obviously like a horrible, dark subject,
yeah.
but this is just like the intro to go on. Why was it so weird then? And yet it still happens now.
Yeah.
But I think these kind of cases, J.C. Lee Dugard and the like, Natasha Kampusch and such, were worldwide stories. You know, JonBenet Ramsey, worldwide story. Never leave your child alone for a minute because blah. And this is all through the 80s. People were like skipping through fields and junkies with Kiora. And, yeah. You know, this was the start of the paranoia, the fear, the removal of children's kind of autonomy and freedom and the ability to just do whatever the fuck you want, whenever the fuck you want, from like May until the end of August. Because it was you and your dog and a stick
yeah.
and the world. And now it's like, don't go past the driveway. Why? Because there's a man coming to get you. And then you're kind of going, ma'am, I think you're overestimating my sexual attractiveness. Yeah. Like, you know. No one's going to run away with me. They'll yeah. like have to lift me with two arms and walk supporting their lower lumbar at the very least, because I'm a chunky kid.
Yeah.
Do you know? It's just that I think the J.C. Dugard's situation and the way it was done right in front of the house. We'll talk about it now in a second.
Yeah.
Right in front of the house, snatched up and then taken away. Only like, you know, a couple of dozen miles away. And 18 years she stayed in that place.
Yeah.
And gave birth to two kids. Like, that shit's wild. And people would see her. People would see, like, this is not right. She's with this man that has her incarcerated. People would see that and go, that's a bit weird. I just won't say anything.
Yeah.
So the fear, the paranoia was reaching fever pitch where everyone was going bananas.
Yeah.
About like, oh, your kids are getting abducted. And yet the ones that were abducted, if they look like they could, you know, if you saw a girl that could be an abducted girl, you're like, oh yeah, but I better not say anything.
I think everyone's kind of people. Afraid of that situation. Remember the Romanian family that had the blonde girl?
Yes.
That was their biological child.
Around the time of the Madeleine McCann kidnapping. Yeah.
People kind of went mad and they were like, no, that's not your child, give her. And they're like, no, that's our child. Shit just happens. And I think it's probably because, you said it before, we're in sort of a litigious kind of a world now.
Yes.
That if you were to say anything or even just the whiff of scandal off somebody is enough to break that person's character.
If you saw somebody on the street now and they had a child and it was misbehaving and it was trying to get away and going, help, help, rape, 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 because these kids are watching stuff online.
Yeah.
Like, there is that, there's a mad balance, like, of these different parabolic curves of societal normality where the goalposts are shifting for all these situations. So you have a kid who's super smart, he's on YouTube the whole time and he knows what a sex offender is.
Yeah.
He knows what a paedophile is, right? And when you're a kid, you'll just say anything to get what you want, right? So if you're fucking, like, but if you're bringing your kid along and he doesn't want to go and he just goes, help, help, this guy is a paedophile, he's trying to abduct me. And you're like, you little bastard, shut up. It's like, help, help. Like, it happens.
My
son
called me a stranger.
Just to get what he wanted.
Because I was picking him up and he was screaming. And I just said to him, because I talked to him for the most part like he's an adult. I say, what are you freaking out for? It's not like I'm a stranger. And he just screamed stranger. And I was like, oh, she's the wrong thing to say. I'm his father. And he's like a little blondie kid and I'm not. And I was like, he's definitely my son. He's 100%. And me trying to swipe through pictures on my phone, you know.
I'd make him bleed and you can test our DNA.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's so weird that, but on the other side of that then, if there is a kid doing that, most people won't go like, hey man, is that your kid?
Because
you're like, what? It's like, are you trying to fuck that kid? You're like, what's your name? I'm going to sue you for defamation.
1 second.
Like, that's you know, there's these different norms. So everyone's afraid of getting their kid robbed and then, like, obviously imprisoned and or raped and then killed immediately. It's 72 hours, like, is the most important. And at the same time, they're also paranoid about being accused of or accusing other people of said crime. So it's like a mad, like, thou shalt not talk about this at all ever.
Yeah, something you think since this happened in the 90s and kids have been getting kidnapped for millennia, you think something would change. You kind of either say, right, well, we're so scared of getting our kids taken away that we're going to lowjack them.
Yeah.
Or we're going to live in a society where I can go up to you and say, is that kid yours? Prove it. You know, stranger danger. Yeah. So something has to change, but it seems
show
like
me
we're
the receipt.
Yeah, it's like we're still trying to kind of go, oh, don't take my kids, but if somebody else's kid is taken, I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? I suppose it kind of plays into that sort of a more insular world that's being created through the sort of the atmosphere of fear that's being created from, you know, terrorism.
Yeah.
And we're just so
indoctrinated.
Yeah, and so more interested in kind of maintaining their own little capsule.
Yeah.
And kind of going, well, my kids are safe, so if that's like, somebody else's kid, I don't care.
We have the knowledge of the world.
Yeah.
But the ability of only one person to experience it.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to interact with anybody else, just in case. You said your kid got lost in the at the party. Sophie Jackson says she gets like that when she loses sight of her dog. Paul really liked
it. Oh, it's exactly the same thing.
Paul... Paul Fake News says, Chunkies are mad for Kiora. He's going to use that one later. That's a that's just a general life.
Yeah. Like if you're infested with junkies, you could just do it. Pour a little stream of Kiora. Yeah.
And they just, make a circle around yourself in Kiora, like salt for witches. And they just like get on their hands and knees and lap it up. Catman put up here, priest is an acronym, pedophile resident in every small town. Never heard that before.
Nice.
And I
do one for preacher and come back to me.
I don't think all priests should be tired with the same brush. It was a certain.
But most priests should be tired and feathered.
Well, you can look it up in our Vatican episode. Yeah. We talk a bit about it. And Gord said that you should keep your kids overfed and ugly. That way, who'd take an ugly kid?
Done and done.
There you go now. So J.C. Lee Dugard was kidnapped by Philip Garrido.
Yes.
On her way home. Or on her way to school, on the 10th of June 1991. And Nancy, Philip Garrido's husband, hopped out of the back of the car, tasered the child, bundled her up and lashed her in the back of the car, right? And this Garrido guy, we'll talk about him in more detail in a little minute, but he was already experimenting with sexual crimes and had already served time in prison for raping a 14-year-old girl in 1972. And he had been married before and they separated. And while he was in prison for another crime in 1976 that we talk about in a second, he made up the plan, not unlike Joseph Fritzl, to go, geez, I'm fed up of going to jail for rape. How can I? Oh, I know, permanent sex slave. So he wanted to have this, quote, Roman
sex slave,
Roman style sex slave, right? And
well, like with a big nose?
No. Like he
garlic?
He wanted to have that. You know, I pick you and just grab one of the good Pokemons out of the shed or whatever. And Nancy, the wife that he was married to while he was in jail for this crime, what was her name? Boca Raton?
Boca Negra.
Boca Negra. So Nancy, like, who was visiting her uncle in jail, saw him and went, oh, lovely bit of stuff in an Irish jumpsuit. And they got married in jail. And he went, do you know what I'd love? I'd love a sex slave. And she's like, Do you want a blowjob or anything? And he's like, no. Want a sex slave. He's like, do you want me to dress like a slave? He's like, no, listen. I'm married to you now. You have to do what I say because they're the rules. It was just weird that like she was willing to go along with all this. And she was actively going along with all of this, right? And Nancy cooperated and gave her the zzz.
Yep, she was 100% complicit.
True in the back of the car. Now, the nationwide search that was sparked by J.C. Lee's disappearance which was kind of still going on in her discovery, like in 2009 when she was discovered, it was still an open cold case. It hadn't been closed off. It hadn't been like, yeah, she's dead, or do you know when they go on, like, I think it's like 5 or 7 years if you're not found, they just pronounce you dead or whatever. So the parents didn't want to allow her to be dead, even though they did divorce at the time. And on the morning of her abduction, Jesse Lee left the house where her toddler half-sister was playing, and her stepfather was, you know, doing the garden or whatever he was doing first thing in the morning. And he said goodbye, and she went, bye, walked up the street, and then a silver car pulled up a couple of houses down. Nancy got out, threw Jesse Lee in the back, and the stepdad gave chase on a bike.
Yeah, like he's in the Goonies.
On a pedal bike. Like he's in E.T. And he tried to chase them, and he didn't. And I was watching in the documentary that did a reenactment, and I was like, motherfucker, what the fuck are you doing? What is this, like that Mega Drive game Skitching? It's not happening. This is not, you know. And mad, like. Yeah. But Nancy Garrido had apparently been scouting for a prize for her husband, scouting for a suitable slave.
Kind of like Myra Hindley and Ian Brady.
Yes, it was a symbiotic.
Yeah.
And I think very highly, like, psychologically controlled relationship.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't...
It's like Kanye and Kim.
Yeah. Who's controlling who there, though, yeah. I think. I don't know. It's just, it's so weird that she would acquiesce to that.
Yeah.
And go like, yeah, okay. And be active in it.
Now, she couldn't have kids. So I think...
She couldn't have kids.
No, she couldn't have kids. So I think he was selling it to her as like, well, we'll kidnap her and she can be your daughter.
All right.
And then I think it bled on to, well, tell you what, she can have babies for us. That kind of way. So playing into that psychological part.
Right. So her using her motherly instinct kids.
She was a religious type as well.
Yeah.
So I'd say he was taking out like the anal and through the 4000 diesel powered. And she was like, not really into that. And he was like, where am I going to get all my sexual fantasies out then? So she probably, maybe like, you wouldn't know what sort of sexual...
She just let the kid take the hit.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Let him get tuckered out on her and then she can just swoop in for the coup de grace.
For the cuddles.
For the cuddles.
Yeah.
And the sambo.
It seemed weird though that like so many people witnessed it, including loads of kids on the street.
Yeah.
The stepdad witnessed it. They had a grand view of the car.
And he had a beautiful sketch of
They Nancy. Knew the guy, they knew the girl, they could, you know what I mean? It was all, it was all, like for any, you know, any other police, like
other,
what do you call them, a regiment, a police force, like,
yeah.
Maybe in South Lake Tahoe they weren't that great, but like, surely, with a fucking description of the car and a sketch of the person who did it, surely that something would be able to be done to catch them.
They didn't even set up roadblocks.
That's madness.
You know, like, now you hear of kids going missing, or like, do you get a phone? Oh, they're supposed to be coming home. They left the friend's party and they walked through the back of the housing estate or something, and they just disappeared. There's nothing. But they had a sketch of Nancy. They had the exact time, the direction of the car, the type of car. It was a man and a woman. They had so much to go on.
Yeah.
And they dropped the fucking ball.
Yeah, that's madness. It's madness. So the Garridos drove for 3 hours to the place that they were living in near Contra Costa County.
While not even being chased by the fucking school bus.
Yeah.
Which is one thing that really boiled my piss when I was looking at this. Like, all the kids jumped on the bus and said, Jace is after being taken. And the bus driver went, well, I have 4 more kids I have to pick up because it's a union job. And didn't give chase, which is just one thing that really fucking annoys me.
Like, you would expect your man to be in like a Blues Brothers situation.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. And the bus is taking the hills like, pff, and all the 12 kids in the back going,
yay! You know, that's what I fucking would, that'd be perfect for me. But didn't even give, there wasn't even a hint of giving chase. Even just fucking take off some direction. A mountain bike would have sped past with a man with a mullet and a fucking a wife beater on.
Yeah.
You know, the kids are like,
I just think
follow.
To go on the bike is probably the first thing. Was like, he's probably fucking raging. He's like, shit, why did I take the bike? Get to the corner. He's like, why did I take the bike?
I have a Porsche.
I had a car in it. I was washing the car.
I was washing the inside of the car.
I was actually washing the car.
I was washing where the key turns.
It's so weird, though, that the thing is, and like with Fritzl, right? And like with a lot of these guys, this stuff is super premeditated. They already have a mad history. We talked about Joseph Fritzl, if you've ever heard that show. He was like a peeping Tom, and then he started exposing himself, and then he started doing the first rapes, and then he got caught. And then when he got caught, he goes, Jesus, I don't want to be getting caught for rapes no more. And then they make this mad elaborate plan, and then they make some kind of a dungeon, and then they kidnap a girl. tale as old as time. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's the shit happens, like, right? So this guy, Garrido, is like peeping Tom, taking loads of drugs, exposes himself to women, then he has a first dalliance with it by molesting a 14-year-old who didn't want to fucking testify. So she's like, oh no, she was intimidated into not testifying.
By the defense attorney.
And in 1976, he takes a prisoner and like fucks her in a garage. And then he goes to jail and he goes, no, not anymore.
Yep.
I need to not get caught again. This is bullshit.
Exactly. He wanted to consolidate all of his sexual deviancy into one victim.
So what he did was, like when you get, you know, a large dog, you have to have a certain amount of area for them to run up and down. And he's like, it's the same for a kid, right? So he builds a fucking shed out the back and a complex in the trees of his back garden. He was released from prison. And we'll tell you how now in a second. But he was living with his elderly mother. And out the back of her house was a bunch of trees. And he built a shed, a soundproof shed.
Which he said was for like a rape music cell and stuff.
Yeah. Like mad.
Yeah.
Do you know? And Nancy was like, I'm cool with this.
But I think that's kind of, it's not only an indictment of his mentality, but it's an indictment of the prison system in itself, that if you take somebody who's a violent offender and put them in a prison, all they're going to be doing all day is fantasizing about what they're going to be doing when they get out. And there's no real sort of rehabilitation being done.
Well, they weren't like psychoanalyzing or helping them with any kind of therapy or anything like that. It's just like, here, go in for that amount of time and then afterwards just come out.
Yeah. Sure, you can have all those soundproofing catalogs. What do you need them for?
Well, the backyard became like a sprawling collection of sheds and tents hidden by trees, and it began as this one soundproof shed that J.C. Lee was put into for almost a year in one room, and then she was allowed into other rooms and stuff as well. And like with Charlie Manson, these MKUltra techniques of taking away your identity and taking away your personality, he told her name was no longer J.C. Lee, and he used to like punish her if he saw her writing it down anywhere. She wasn't allowed to write, and he said, your name is now Snoopy.
Hmm.
Yeah. And he began...
It's a weird sex slave name.
It's weird. Do you know? Like, he's coming in going, okay, J.C. Lee, I'm going to rape you now. And she's like, oh, Mondays. But it's a weird name to pick.
Would she lie on top of the shed then? Yeah. When he wasn't around?
It's weird that, like, she was able to exist there without going, yeah, how the fuck can I, like, impale my face on a spike or something, like how do I get out of this? But like, the thing that I respect about her the most is her tenacity and how she was able to deal with that shit. Man, she was able to, like, at 11 go, okay, if I need to stay alive, I have to fucking be sharp. I have to be sharp. Like, I have to be watching.
Could be Sean Bean.
Have to be like, you know, I have to be like on guard, watching what this guy's doing, listening to everything he's saying, like watching.
Like, not at the start, dumb. From what I said, she was, when she was being brought from the house to the compound, she was like counting the steps, trying to get the ambient sounds, trying to, you know, develop some sort of a big picture of where she was. So if ever she could get a message out, she'd be able to tell people or tell her parents what happened.
And this is the thing, like, people say that she tried to get the message out, she had Stockholm Syndrome and stuff. We talk about that in a little while as well. She didn't. It was survival.
She had Woodstock Home Syndrome.
Ah, Snoopy. That was it. And we didn't even plan that. He kept her in the soundproof shed, and he would rape her continually, right? She was in this place for a year, and he expanded the backyard area with high fences and tents and other small structures as J.C. Lee gave birth to two kids that were fathered by Garrido.
Yeah, once when she was 14 and one when she was 17.
Yeah. And he told her that there was dogs outside the door and he wouldn't let her see the sunshine. She was practically in the dark, and he would come and visit her every day. And sometimes he'd bring her milkshakes, and sometimes he'd bring her like a burger, and sometimes he'd bring her like a rape. And then he explained to her that she was sent to, get this now, she was sent to help him with his quote unquote sexual problems, and the quote unquote demon angels allowed him to take her. So this man came to this 11-year-old girl and said, the demon angels let me steal you from your parents to help me with my sexual problems.
As chat up lines go, I've used worse.
Yeah. And got a good result, I guess. Yeah. Imagine that's
horrible. That's being already told that when you're 11.
He's already putting that responsibility on her. You know, like the it's so crazy like how good he was at manipulating.
Yeah.
And it's just a natural talent for some of these guys, you know.
And in a way, I suppose if you're a young child and you're trapped in a horrible situation, probably all you really have that would be in any way effective for your brain is prayer. You know, if you're anywhere religious, you'd be praying and going, oh God, please help me, God, get something. For him to come in and say, actually, God allowed this to happen. So that cuts off all avenues of hope, which I think to destroy hope is a pretty big crime in and of itself.
But it took away her identity, took away her name.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff does affect you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And later on, we'll see when she was being interrogated, I guess, by the FBI, that she was still, even though everybody was safe and, you know, she was in the custody of the police and all, she still wouldn't give out her name.
Yeah.
She still wouldn't say my name.
She couldn't even pronounce it. She hadn't said it in so long. She had to write it down.
Like
when I was reading about this,
hard conditioning.
When I was reading about the story from start to finish, like already knowing the outcome, but reading from start to finish, I kind of got lost and I was kind of going, I hope this ends with her killing him with a garden shears.
Yeah.
Like I spit on your grave or something just for the shit. And stabbing people saying my name is JC or something.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of, you
that's
want
that. That's
the
romanticized
that, you know?
Hollywood version that gives you that satisfaction.
Yeah.
But what actually happened is she's you know, living her life now with her kids and he's in jail. Which should be enough.
Which I think is kind of a return to the status quo. If you think about it, like if he had his 50-year sentence and had been left in prison, he'd be in prison and she'd be living the life she has, probably with children at this stage. You know, probably not have father or mother them at 11 years old.
Yeah.
But like it's almost like a return to the status quo, and it seems like nothing really changed, but everything changed. You know, it's only
changed from her perspective, really. Yeah. Like, the whole world is different because of her, but not to her.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so hard to understand. Like, none of us will ever understand it, obviously. But
hopefully.
But she tries to explain it to people in a way that... And she's, like, totally open with interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's appeared on, like, 2020, like, a bunch of times and wrote a couple of books and all this, where she's, like, adamant that it's not Stockholm Syndrome. It's do it or fucking die, like.
Yeah.
Do you know? Garrido... After, like, bouts of 24 hours of taking drugs and raping her, you know, when you have the long weekend free
from
work or whatever, and he would break down and start to tell the child all of his problems and be like, I'm so sorry, I feel so guilty, and, you know, I shouldn't be doing this, and I have problems, and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's totally MKUltra, being these two different people, you know. And Nancy would do the same when Garrido wasn't there, and she started coming in and giving the child food and stuff like that. She would break down and be like, why does he love you and he doesn't love me, and all this kind of stuff. And you're like, that's completely fucked. Like, putting all of that emotional weight on a child,
and for
to
her
go like, this is your fault. Like,
for her to come through that and not be an absolute fucking basket case.
Oh man.
Is a testament to her strength.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dugard, like, she began to fear for her life, and she understood instinctively, as you would, that if she didn't comply with what this man wanted when he was in his rages and when he was in this, you know, fevered state, that he would kill her.
Yeah.
He was violent as it was.
And the children.
And then
he'd
break down into an emotionally unstable state. And as soon as she had kids, like, you have to comply.
Yeah.
You have to, because there's already leverage there.
There's nothing that I wouldn't do for my children except for spend Monday nights with them.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that I wouldn't do for
Monday
my children.
Monday nights are Steve time.
Yeah. It's Stephen Gordo time. But if somebody came in and was like, had one of my kids in a headlock and was like, I need you to go in and kill your neighbor or kill yourself, I'd be like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, you do what you could to sort of to save them any sort of hardship or any sort of pain.
You would. It's so strange, man. Like we said,
I hate my neighbor. But so happily, just
any excuse.
Yeah.
Paul from the Discord server said that it's definitely reminiscent of MK Ultra, which is true. Like, he changed her name. His conditioner, like Charlie Manson, changed all the girl names that of his followers and stuff. They all got nicknames, and
he did give her a cat.
Yeah, he used to give her kittens, plural, that he would later take away and kill in front of her. Like, that is textbook MK Ultra stuff, right? And later on, after a couple of years of being Snoopy, he allowed her to choose her own name, and she chose the name Alyssa.
Yeah.
So she was like, I'm Alyssa now. And JC Lee was, for all intents and purposes, gone.
It's weird that she chose Alyssa because she liked Alyssa Milano from Who's the Boss?
Yeah.
Which is, who is the boss?
Basically, yeah, the same relationship put out into a sitcom.
Yeah.
Where Tony Danza plays Garrido. And
yeah. Angela is a sex slave.
Get back in the soundproof room. tell us about Garrido. Like, this guy was suspicious, Steve, from the jump.
He was cagey as fuck. So he was already a person of interest. As we already said, he did rape a girl in 1972 when she was 14 years old. She didn't testify. Then he kidnapped Catherine Calloway and kept her in a makeshift dungeon for a few hours. I think probably got a day out of her. And then a cop came along. And
so tell us then the story of Catherine Calloway. Like how that night he had already tried that shit with some other people. Yeah.
He'd already tried to rape another woman. Didn't work out well for him.
He got a slap at a steering wheel.
Yeah. And then he went and he just approached Katie Calloway. She was leaving work. I think she was a dealer. She ended up as a dealer in Nevada. But she was coming back to her car and he tapped on the window and said, could I get a lift? I'm heading such a direction. And she said, I'm heading that way as well.
He was thumbing lifts off everybody to see who would pull over.
Exactly. So,
and I don't think the other woman was named, but he had got in the car and she had brought him. He said, like, go down to this dark, you know, street where nobody was, and they stopped the car and he tried to get her and he failed. Like she got out of the car and he was running laps around the car after in the reconstruction. I think it was a bit overzealously produced, but
I think he had his skills on, and he hopped her off the steering wheel and he handcuffed her and gave her a few schmacks, knocked her out, and then brought her. She woke up in this makeshift it was like a storage locker you'd find on Storage Wars, but not one you'd really want to bid on.
Yeah.
You know, I see handcuffs and I see a stack of porno, and porno might be expensive.
I smell metal on the air.
Yeah.
What's that? It reminds me of something.
You see just before the break, do you look in a box and go, oh, yeah. And then you
what's
come back after the
box?
Break. Yeah.
And, like some weird, like fucked up version of Deal or No Deal.
Yeah. So they, a cop happens by, he had to break the lock and in he pops and she legs it and he gets arrested. He gets sentenced to 50 years. He was hoping to get a smaller sentence because he pleaded guilty to it.
Yeah.
And the judge went, you're getting 50 years, because he was the judge for My Cousin Vinny. Fuck you. And
these two youths.
Yeah. What is a youth? So he gets fucking sentenced to prison and he goes in there. He only serves about 11 or 12 years. But he was a strange creature.
Like the fucked up thing about that garage, right? That Storage Wars storage unit that he got, right? He was there to Nancy going, I need a place where I can just go and like pull myself around the room on my tippy toes to like crazy snuff porn that I bought in Mexico.
Yeah.
Right? And she's like, well, you're not doing that around the house. Plus the fact his elderly mother lived there.
Yeah.
So he said,
she's probably sick of it.
Stop. Do you know? I'm all
spreadsheets are like cardboard. I'm sick of them.
I'm all chapped.
Yeah.
So he set up a projector and a 35 mil.
Yeah, like a reel to reel.
Reel to reel thing, right?
The seediest of porn, I think, on a reel to reel.
Yeah, it keeps you right on rhythm.
Yeah.
And he has the fucking mattress all done out like a junkie's den.
Yeah.
And like shit on the walls.
Handcuffs, pair of scissors, she remembers.
Like, that's fucked up. And he used to just go in there for 2 or 3 days at a time and close it.
Yeah.
And just take a bunch of drugs and just trip balls and roll around the place.
Yeah.
And then he had Nancy come over and she was like, oh, this is a great place. Because they just needed a place of their own.
Yeah.
His elderly mother was at home. They couldn't do that in the house. There's just Kiora everywhere.
Love the junkies. Lapping it up off the ground like ants.
Yeah, but it just, like, that's a fucked up scene. And eventually for him to go, you know what this place is missing?
Some throw pillows?
A rape victim.
Yeah.
Let's go shopping. And he went out and got one and brought it back to that. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's fucked up. That Philip Garrido man is fucked up.
He is. He's a
head case. Had it built already and went, okay, let's go. Caught, C-O-T. Cops came along, found the lock.
Yeah.
And your one runs out with her baps hanging out going, help me, officer, help me. And he's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Like, I don't believe these guys that are going, there's a girl that's naked in a, you know, and there's a guy that's naked in a storage locker and the place.
Yeah, he tried to say, oh, this is me and my girlfriend just hanging out. And she was like, and no. But he's a, it's just a fucking, he's a fool. He's a weird, horrible creature. And like when I was looking at pictures when he was younger,
thinks he's super smart, man.
He got like he studied some psychology when he was in prison. Thinks he's smart, and everybody. And that's always like when you get like I mean, BTK Dennis Rader, that fucking serial killer fella. He's a plank, but he thought he was real clever.
Yeah,
and he was sending like floppy disks to the police saying they'll never catch me. He just looked at the file code and could see whose computer was used to create the floppy. You know what I mean?
Well,
he just thinks he's so fucking clever.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. But then again, he got away with it for 18 years.
That's the profile, is that they want to challenge them, like come and catch me.
Yeah,
I'm so great you can't even catch me. You know, that's half the crack.
Yeah, and then like he said that he found religion, and like he said he had like a magic voice box.
Yeah,
he could talk to God in, and he wanted to
Joseph
sell this.
Smith from the Mormons had the same one,
and except the two rocks in his box were his own rocks, and you had to fondle them to get any information out of them. But he set up his own church then. And was trying to get people to... He got money off his elderly neighbour, a couple of grand, to set up this church. And it's almost like he was feeling remorseful, but didn't quite know how to...
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I feel really bad about this.
I need to pay it forward.
Let me go.
How do you pay rape forward?
Yeah. Would you go around being subservient to gay men?
I don't know.
Just park your arse up against the glory hole and just like, I'm doing my penance. You know?
Yeah. It's mad though, like that whole situation was allowed to happen. And then when he's arrested and given 50 years for kidnap, he's like, what did I do?
Yeah.
Like he kidnapped a woman, brought her over state lines, was charged at a state and federal level.
Yeah.
I was given 50 years and he sweet talked the judge and working in the library with the old man with the crow.
Yeah.
And like made friends with like a black dude who could get anything you want. And he got out after like 12 years.
Yeah.
After being allowed to get married to Nancy Bocanegra.
And even though they said he's more than likely going to offend again. That was like on his file, a big stamp. Yeah, gonna do it again.
Yeah.
And he put him on parole. He had to check him with his parole officer. But his parole officer pop out to the house and wouldn't look out in the back garden, wouldn't ask any extra questions. It was just like, it's an awful lot of underpants on the washing line there. What's going on? You know what I mean? It's just like this fucking...
You never fit into those little pink knickers.
Yeah.
What's the crack?
Actually, I do every night. You know, it's just, there's just such a fucking paucity of care from any official
absolutely.
That I see in this.
And it's just anybody that I point a finger at. It's the police that dealt with him.
Yeah.
The after sales service.
Yeah.
From, what was the name of the prison he was in?
Leavenworth.
Leavenworth. He was in Leavenworth. And they just let him out and put a yoke on his ankle and went, go on home.
And it was like his GPS was a passive GPS. They'd only look at it if there was an infraction, but they'd only know there was an infraction if they were looking at it.
Yeah.
So he moved like outside the state lines like a quantum. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't know you're raping unless you look at him. And when you are looking at him, he's definitely doing this. What? Look away. Oh, where's he gone? Yes.
Dr. Sam Beckett convinced that rape could be done through time.
Oh, boy.
Into the quantum rape accelerator and vanished.
That's the thing, man. Yeah, it's fucked up. But like Nancy met Philip Garrido in prison when she was visiting her uncle and they fell in love, right? And she wrote him all the time and eventually they got married in 1981 and he was released in 1988 after serving just 11 years of that 50-year sentence. And he was sentenced in 1976 to 50 years. So he should have only got out in 2016.
Yeah.
7 years after J.C. Lee Dugard was released.
But like 11 years is a tiny amount of time.
Yeah, it's an insulting amount of time. The parole board allowed him to live in that house with his elderly mother because she was a ward of care or whatever. But she was like half disabled.
Yeah.
And Nancy was really in the whole system. She was like, I'm helping. I'm being a good wifey.
Yeah.
I have to, like... and
I can change.
Yeah, we can't go into it in this show because it'll be a fucking 3-hour show. Trying to talk through the psychology of what Philip was going through, what Nancy was enabling, and then what J.C. Lee was going through. This is just like peppered. If you're interested in this, there's documentaries. Yeah. Go and look at that stuff. There's one specifically on Nancy and other wives of serial rapists and how, or the relationship the people had with serial rapists and how they facilitate that through, you know, their behavior. Like Philip Garrido went to jail at some point in the early 90s for 4 months because he failed to show up for a
drug test,
a drug
urine test.
Yeah, urine test for drugs
or
whatever.
Something.
And he failed to show up. Oh, and the parole officer was like, what's the crack? And he's like, oh,
I was raping. What? I was having a crepe.
I hadn't got anything left. And it's crazy that they just took him 4 months, put him in jail, and she then, instead of letting the child go without any repercussions or anything like that, kept her and fed her and went, he'll be back. And at that point now, there was doors open, there was kids involved. Like, she could, like, JC Lee could have got up and walked out.
Yeah.
On many occasions.
Or Nancy could have let her go, could have put a bag over her head, put her in a car, drove her somewhere, dropped her off. And she probably wouldn't have been able to remember where she was or point out the exact house. She might have gotten away with it and just told Philip that she escaped someday. You know, there was no consequences whatsoever if Nancy had to just let JC and the kids go.
Well, there was, because JC and the kids.
Yeah,
I was just going to say.
I think they got the number 4, Baby, I Want Your Love
Thing. Celebrate good times, come on. But it was just one of those things where, like, if he had to let her go, she would have told somebody, and then he would have been in jail, and then it would have went, oh, you that lad that's in jail because your wife is out. And he would have stayed in jail forever.
Yeah.
And Nancy would have been grand and gone off and lived her life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it was a kind of a toss-up, like, did she want to be alone forever? Because if she had let JC Lee go, Garrido would have stayed in jail and Nancy would be alone.
Or maybe she was in for a penny and for a pound. I've come this far.
Yeah, maybe she thought, like, I get in trouble too, so I have to keep it going.
And who'll break me
here? Who knows what Philip is telling her? Going, you keep her there, because if she gets caught, we're all going down.
Exactly.
Like, there's so many variables there, you know? Before the kidnapping, though, right? This is one thing I saw on the video that was really creepy. Like, proper creepy, right? Before kidnapping, Nancy was enabling the fantasy of this with Philip.
Yeah.
And there's one video where he's playing the guitar in front of a playground, sitting up against a tree.
Ugh.
And she's videoing him. And if you watch that, lads, online, folks that are listening now, watch that video of just him singing. And it's so like, and I'm gonna fucking fuck all the fucking kids. And you see it in his eyes, man. He's like, his face is all gnarled up and everything. And Nancy's with the camcorder. And instead of focusing on him the way it's supposed to look like he's doing it, she's like going off to the left and zooming in on the kids in the playground behind, and then going back in and looking at him for a second, and then turning to the right and looking over his shoulder and filming the fucking kids in the playground across over his shoulder.
Man.
Like, even then she was like, I'm into this. Like, I'm ready to go. So what's going on in her mind? You talk about Stockholm syndrome. Yeah. Like, is she imprisoned? Is she just as imprisoned as JC Lee Dugard?
She might have been sold like a bill of goods from him, saying, look, you can have all the kids you want. Like, if, I mean, I suppose that's sort of the biological imperative of a woman is a very powerful thing. And she's not much to look at as well. And I'm not saying that.
She was nice when she was younger, I'd say.
Was she? She looked a bit like one of the Addams Family, but not one of the main cast.
Yeah.
One of the ones that show up to a wedding. Yeah. You know?
The extended Addams
like
Family.
Like a Gill man or something. But she struck me as, because she couldn't have kids, the urge to mother somebody, look after somebody, and maybe she just wanted, like, if she's looking after him, she's like, oh, he's a broken man, I can make him happy, I can make him better, I can take him out of his dark moods, and then that's a mothering side to me. Oh, I can do this to kids as well, cool, bring the kids in, I'll look after them, I'll you know, help them with their wounds, and I'll talk them through stuff, and I'll cradle them and stuff. And it's might be that mothering kind of thing. And dented people are like that. I mean, like, people go out and kill people because they're like, oh, I love them so much, I have to then kill them. You know, so I'd say she's as mentally dented as he was, especially seeing as she met him in prison. And I doubt the question didn't come up, like, what are you in for? Oh, I raped a 14-year-old, then I kidnapped this other woman and raped her and kept her as a sex slave. I would have got away, but it wasn't for those darn kids.
Yeah.
So it just seems like she kind of went, okay, she was in at the start.
Yeah.
From the very beginning, she knew he was a rapist.
Her uncle in jail, and she knew what he was in, and she married him while they were still in jail.
Yeah, and the uncle allowed it. You know what I mean? Like, if I was in prison and there was
a nonce.
And I made buddies with a rapist, which I wouldn't do, but if I did, and I was like, hey, this is my niece, she's a...
You're going to be my friend whether you like it or not.
Yeah, you know, it just seemed like that if her uncle was sort of introducing his niece to a rapist, then maybe there's something wrong with the uncle. And if there's something wrong with the uncle, then, and there's something wrong with Nancy, then maybe the whole family...
Yeah.
There was something going on there, maybe something Paul incestuous, maybe something weird.
Paul from Not Another Fake Newscast suggested that in the chat here as well, you know. If any of you guys have any insight or have any opinion on in the Discord server why Nancy was like that, I read out those comments in a few minutes. And if anybody at home has any links to any articles about similar situations, or you would wonder why. This is the thing that I take away from this, like, that Stockholm Syndrome is not the answer for what Jesse Lee Dugard was feeling for Philip Garrido, and she says that herself.
Yeah.
And number two, why would Nancy help? Because she's in jail now for this shit too.
Yeah.
Like, why would she help so vehemently when she was getting, like, nothing ostensibly getting nothing out of it? Do you know? So throw in your suggestions at @TConspiracyGuys on Twitter, or on Facebook, or on our Discord server. So Sophie Jackson says, do we know much about Nancy's background, childhood, any mental illness, no indicators? I don't think she was diagnosed with anything.
No.
Now, Philip Garrido self-diagnosed himself with all sorts of different types of psychological disorders, and I think he was just one of those really crazy narcissistic,
he'd read something about messianic book and go, complex. That's me.
Yeah. Gord says Nancy is one of those people that just really wanted friends. Paul said, if he needs to guess, I'd say she comes from an abusive background. I would concur with that.
Yeah.
I'm saying she's been conditioned to accept abusive behavior or manipulating behavior, and she just found, same with all the Manson kids, man. They were all coming from broken homes, sexual abuse, drug addiction. And Charlie was like going, hey, man, come on, get in my van. Take you to promised land.
Yeah. But what I find an awful lot in these stories about women that are kidnapped and held as sex slaves, there's usually somebody else that enables them to do that.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, Norman Bates's mother and that mad Chinese lad that kidnapped his former teacher and chained her to a bed, or chained her and her daughter in a wardrobe. There was somebody living upstairs. You know, there's loads of situations like Ian Brady and Myra Hindley where there's a woman there that's bolstering the man. Behind every great kidnapper rapist, there's a woman.
Yeah.
You know? So it seems like they kind of need that, or there is a certain type of woman out there that wants to enable a man to do that, either be it for the extension of if they feel powerless. If she was raped herself or molested herself,
she would want the power over somebody else.
Exactly. Maybe she'd want to pass on that sort of...
Christine, like, and Eric said maybe she was abused or manipulated herself. Yeah, it could definitely be in that. If anyone has any type of insight, then just get on to us and let us know, especially in the chat before the episode is over. So one of the sadder things I think about this whole thing, I know it's, you know, creation of life and all that stuff, but... Garrido ended up getting Jesse Lee Dugard pregnant.
Yeah, not once, but twice.
And she had two kids, yeah. And now, I mean, obviously those kids are a blessing, and you know, Jesse Lee loves them and still raises them now. And, you know, they obviously have an awful history, but sure shit, I mean, there's more than just the two of them that have an awful, like, just because they're blonde white kids doesn't mean that they deserve to be any special, more special than anybody else or whatever. But it's just particularly with this situation in mind, it is a really shitty way to be introduced into the world, a fucking soundproof room in the dark.
Yeah, because like a baby is this little like fucking blank hard drive, and you just download the world into them bit by bit.
Yeah,
and you want to show them all the good things and all the best things. Like, you don't want to be like, oh, can you just go and hide in that room? Daddy's going to rape me for a while. You know, it's just a horrible.
And if you've watched the movie Room, like, you would get some sort of an insight into what it would be like to be the child in that situation. And it is like a shed in the garden, and That's it. And for that child, for the first maybe 25 minutes of the movie, you're finding out that the child is like, all it knows is what's on TV. And this is the way J.C. Lee educated herself. Like, she got pregnant and she was 3 years incarcerated. And when they brought her in her first home-cooked meal, she was like, what's the crack? Why is this not like McDonald's or whatever? Yeah. And they're saying, because we're going to have to feed you like good stuff, like with vitamins and shit. And she's like, why? And they're like, well, do you know the way you're not having your periods anymore? Yeah. And she's like, yeah, I was wondering about that. I was like, yeah.
When a man really, really hates women.
Yeah.
You know?
Crazy. She was told she was pregnant at like 14.
She was 14, like.
And they gave her a bunch of VHS tapes and described like
how the home birth's going
to
go.
Yeah, this is going to go like this. She said, watch them tapes. This is what's going to happen. And she gave birth to two children in those sheds, right?
A fair fucks to her. I mean, like, there's people who go into tough, hospitals man. To have babies, and it's unsuccessful.
Yeah.
So I mean,
with the wealth of medical knowledge around them. Yeah.
But like, I mean, the more I read about this and the more I know about the story, JC's fucking resolve and her strength. I mean,
absolutely.
JC 2020, man. You know.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... commendable. Yeah, I mean, the stuff that... And to see her fucking smiling.
Yeah.
You know, like, if I bang my toe off the end of the bed in the morning, that's the day written off.
It takes you 2 days to get over that
shit. You know, just sobbing. But, like, the fact that she's able to come through this, have two kids in a fucking shed with a man she hates.
It could be the thing, like, where she's trying to stay... Like, her resolve to stay alive, to take care of the kids.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm not going to have this kid and then die and then have this kid be raised by these two crazy fucks.
To have whatever. And even said when... she said that when Garrido held up the kid... first, I looked in the eyes and said, oh God, please give me the strength not to hurt this child.
Yeah, and I think, and this is a turning point for how Garrido was, his modus operandi operated. After the second child was born, he kind of stopped habitually raping Jesse Lee.
Yeah.
And it was a thing of, he had convinced himself that he had cured himself. We talk about that in a second now, but like, it seemed that he just either got bored or he got guilty.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, this is bigger than all of us now, you know.
Because not only does he have to look into the mirror at himself, he has all these eyes on him now. Yeah,
and they're all his eyes looking back at
exactly,
him.
Yeah, exactly, because they're all blue-eyed. They're
fucking his eyes, man. Jesus. Sophie Jackson says, do you think he chose such a young child so he could manipulate her before she came to conceiving age, so by the time that she's subservient to him? I think so. I think he chose a young child to mould. And a lot of the analysis of the case said that he tried it with 25-year-old.
They're too big, they fight Calaway. Back.
And yeah, like she's already... wise, you're already smart, and it'll take too long to break her down and convince her stuff. So I think, yeah, Sophie, choosing a young victim had the desired effect, you know.
And I suppose it was easy, and I suppose when you think about it, you're going to get more mileage, if that's a horrible way to describe it, but he seemed like he had pedophile tendencies.
Oh, from day one. Yeah.
You know, because it seemed like his sexual perversion began when he was young, and he was probably always in that mindset. That, like, when he sort of had this sexual perversion from nearly age, he was looking at girls his own age and he never stopped.
Yeah.
Really.
Not Ryan Dunn in the Discord chat room says, I think it's Brennan. Is that Brennan with his beard? Brennan says that Nancy probably would be harder to convince for an older girl. Like, if he chose a girl that was 20 and Nancy's like 30, she'd be like, will you replace me with a younger,
more sexual rival. Yeah.
It could end up being a rival. And as it was, Nancy was already jealous of Jesse Lee and would give her the digs and be like, fuck you and all, like, and then cry and say, I'm so sorry, I'm so guilty, and blah, blah, blah. Roller coasters of emotions, you know. But after the kids were born and grown up a little small bit, the sheds became too small for them to be cooped up and all the time. So Garrido allowed them to leave and walk around the yard, and they used to plant flowers and, you know, have little tents and stuff that they'd stay
no
in.
No trampolines.
No flying kites.
Yeah.
And
no often, 8-foot ladders.
often neighbours would comment on the three blonde girls playing in the back garden of the...
Sallow-skinned, dark-haired
Garridos. But nobody thought to call the police, right? And one neighbour, Patrick McQuaid, met JCD through the fence in the backyard one day in the mid-90s. And he asked her if she lived there. And she said yes. And her name was Jesse Lee. And after that, and after he not reporting it to the police, Garrido built an 8-foot-high fence around the property. And nobody thought to wonder what the fuck is going on.
But see, I suppose...
Parole officers were coming every month.
Yeah.
And Paul Fake News says, was it like Tim Toolman Taylor in the neighbor? Hi, neighbor. Yeah. Where'd you get those three little blonde kids? he goes, hey, what's your name? I'm Jesse Lee. Come here.
Yeah.
And he pulled her into the house. And then like a couple of weeks later, there's an 8-foot fence and no one said anything. What the fuck is that shit about?
Well, I suppose, I mean, given like America being America, if somebody has a chain link fence around their house, nobody's asking questions. You must go, oh, maybe they got broken into and that's why they have that. Because a real kind of defensive, like every house is Fort Kerium, you know, and nobody bats an eyelid. If you had bars...
Put your foot on my property, I'll shoot you.
Yeah, he has bars all over the windows in the shed and stuff to stop them from getting out. And
it's covered in trees and it's all secluded.
Nobody questions like, oh, that's just a fence, you know?
Well, he built the 8-foot-high fence thinking that he could, you know, shelter them or whatever. But what he did do through either hubris or foolishness was he decided to integrate them into the Garrido's lives a bit more. And Alyssa, or JCD, but as she was called, Alyssa, was now in her early 20s. And he started to bring her into the house and introduce her to people.
Yeah.
And he started a business in the back of his house.
Printing business.
Printing out flyers and business cards and shit. And guys used to come into the house and get the stuff and be all like, like ringing up and asking, and she'd be like, "Hello, Garino's Printing. This is Alyssa," and you're like, "Bitch, you sound like J.C. Lee Dugard." Yeah. You know, like,
"Is that cracker, what you talking about? No, J.C. Lee, my name's Alyssa."
That's yeah. mad. That's mad that that was allowed to happen. And there was guys in like documentaries that I said that I watched that said, "Yeah, when I went into the house, you know, and I seen this like this young, beautiful white woman standing, sitting there, like answering phones and stuff like that. I was like, is this is your wife?" Presuming that the older, more kind of Hispanic looking older lady was like a maid or a housekeeper because of the kids or whatever. And Garrido is like, yeah, that's my wife. So he would consider Alyssa the wife to strangers.
Yeah.
And the two kids were his kids. And then Nancy was the maid. Like, Nancy must have felt in the fucking hip in the place, man. Say she was tick.
And then to the two girls, Alyssa or Nan JC Lee and the two daughters, Angel and Starlet. Starlet was a family name, actually, because Garrido's father was a Toyota. and the two kids, he said that JC Lee and her two daughters were all sisters.
The grandma of Vences.
In the house. But when people showed up, she was the wife. So everybody had to keep change places.
Yeah.
Every time somebody showed up. But she had internet access, like.
She had a
phone.
She
was fucking sending emails to people.
She was on the phone constantly answering, talking to someone, going, "Hello, Garrido's Printing. This is Alyssa. Please help me. I'm being raped habitually." But at this point, like, she wasn't being. And it was kind of, everything was normalizing.
Yeah.
And it was kind of becoming you're still here.
And it's hard to get a job. So. Yes.
And this, in this economy.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, this is the thing that people say, the reason she stayed was because of Stockholm Syndrome, because she started to feel a sympathy or feel an empathy for her captor. She's like, no. Well, on the 2020 interview, she said, unequivocally, unwaveringly, she knew that this man was her captor, but she couldn't be assured of safety when she left or in the future. So she just stayed until she knew for definite, for shizzle, for show.
Like, if she was going out visiting people as well.
Brennan says, and maybe she had dental insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, like, really rare.
Yeah, that's important. It's really rare. And she's got Nancy to cook all her meals for her.
Exactly.
And give her a few thumps every now and then. Right in that sweet spot in the back where you kind of have a little bit of a knot after a hard day's printing. But, like, if she's out meeting people and out doing whatever, she doesn't, like, one of the kids could be permanently in a state of, Philip's going to get you or Nancy's going to get you.
Yeah.
They don't know. It's like, oh, we're going to shoot you or we're going to kill you or whatever. You know, so even she might be able to say, yeah, I'm JC Lee, come back and help me, and the police show up, and all of a sudden it's a hostage situation, she could lose her daughters.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, Garrido's in for...
It's Waco all over again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it could happen. Well, Garrido starts to slip up now at this point. So,
yeah,
so like,
you're talking, Lula.
You're talking like JC Lee is in her mid to late 20s. They've normalized the household. They have a printing business running from the house. And Garrido starts to get a bit cocky, and he's bringing the two younger daughters who look like... you know, interview with the vampire. They're grossly deficient in vitamin D. They can't open their eyes properly. They're sleepy, quiet, and like generally odd.
Yeah.
Do you know, like Wednesday Addams.
Because he's never really been socialized with other children.
Yes, and never been out in sunshine properly. And, you know, even like Jason Dugard says, like, she even still has a problem, like, in bright sunlight with her eyes, like your eyes condition or whatever, right? And... they have rickets, Gord says. I don't know if that's what rickets is, but it's not. I don't think it's that. He went into the FBI and he went, "I know how to fix sex offenders." Here's a 4-page essay. No joke, bottle of coke, brought a 4-page essay to the fucking
with my 18-year program.
Right?
Yeah.
And brought his two daughters to the office and handed a 4-page essay over the counter and went, "I would love to be allowed to do a presentation to university in Berkeley, right?
Yeah.
About fixing sexual behavioral problems."
To like a bunch
mine.
Of college students are to really going to be interested
students.
In listening.
And he's like, "I have fixed it. I used to be one myself. And the cure is kidnap a girl for like 18 years and then rape her a bunch of times.
Diagrams
and then have
three.
Not one, but two children." Like, how audacious is he?
And then it was a couple of the cops actually on campus in Berkeley, two lady cops, and one of the documentaries are sitting there proud as fucking punch.
Yeah, well, I mean, you would be.
Yeah, Dora was like,
she listened to her Oprah whisper.
Yeah, but there was like, they weren't like, using my police training, I could see something was off. It was like, as a mother, I just felt something was weird, okay?
Yeah.
So that kind of sparked the sort of suspicion and saying, this guy's got two daughters. They bring him for another meeting and he kind of goes, yeah, I'm a sex offender. I raped and kidnapped a woman back in the 70s. And, oh, these children, oh, these are just friends of my my brother's kids.
Yeah. So like, so oh, this is violating his parole on yeah. three counts.
So he's crossed state lines.
He's crossed state lines. He's gone past the 60-kilometer exclusion zone yeah. from his house that he's supposed to be in. And he's in the presence of minors, which yeah. he's not supposed to be either. And he hasn't... Imagine these two kids roll in. What's your name? Starlight and Starbright.
Yeah. Together and, we
and,
are.
Yeah. And they're going, okay, let's just look you up in the...
Yeah.
Okay. They have, there's no, these kids don't exist. Yeah. What the fuck is going on? Like, of course. Of course, man. You show up with two children in a car and you can't find them in your fucking computer. Yeah. They don't have their like footprints from the hospital. Yeah. You're like, where did you get these kids?
They don't even
man?
Have belly buttons. I mean, what's going on? You know?
It's so mad.
They get suspicious and they call his parole officer and say, what's going on? This guy showed up with two kids. He got kids. The parole officer like, no. And he's haven't been out to the house. I've heard children. I've smelled them, but I've never seen them.
Sophie Jackson asks, did he ever rape the kids? I wouldn't say so.
I don't think he did.
I don't. I think Jesse Lee said no, he didn't. Yeah. It was all for her. Freddie Jane said he just raped himself out. He was just like, ah, fiddle blah. Like when you start eating like a big bag of Lay's.
Yeah.
And then you get about like three quarters of the way down, you're like, oh man. Like
I hate
it's
myself.
Not there's not enough to roll up and put back in the cupboard, but I don't want to finish these, you know?
Yeah. He probably was all raped out. He got a whole lot of loving for a handful of nothing.
Gord says they're like the Wonder Twins where they just join hands.
Yeah.
Just
form
be like,
of
form
slave.
Of sunlight.
Yeah. and then just give JC a nice even tan.
Yeah. And Brennan says, what's up with parole officers restricting access to minors all of a sudden? Yeah, I hear you, bro.
I hate when parole officers restrict my access to minors.
How else are you supposed to play Magic the Gathering, you know?
There's a documentary on Netflix about JC Lee and the two parole officers. Not just look at them. They should get their own spin-off. Did you see that one?
Uh-huh.
She has like helmet hair.
Oh, yeah.
That is brilliant.
Oh, my God.
It's like when Vader
they're
takes so, off the front pass of those
so
masks.
Good, man.
And they're like, yeah. And then the pictures he has like, you have a gun laid down with like their warrant card and then like a high-vis vest. Look, there's his signature right here. That's
yeah,
my claim
to
fame.
They're so proud of what they...
Yeah.
But I mean, fucking fair play. Like, it's probably the one thing that they got to do that was like of world renown.
Yeah.
They found JC Dugard. So tell us then what happened. He spilled the beans on himself. And these two girls went, hey, these two women went, hey, what are yeah. those two girls doing here?
And so in an effort to prove his innocence, he brought JC Lee and the two girls to an arranged parole hearing down at the parole office. And they were taken off in the separate rooms and questioned. And they were like, what's going on? Who are these children? And he goes, they're the, who's the father of these kids? And he's like, the father of those kids is the son of my mother. And they're like, okay, this isn't a fucking crossword. What the heck? You know, this, what,
these two children and their wives met a man on his way to St. Ives. You're yeah. like, no, come on, bro.
Hang on, did you kill my brother in Nakatomi Plaza? So, and they bring JC Lee into another room and they start asking her questions like, so what's going on? Who are you to him? What's your name? And she got really agitated.
She started making up names. She said, yeah. she said she was Alyssa and then she said she was... Some other name, I can't
something
remember
Smith,
right now.
I think, and she was, a battered else. Wife. And
yes, that she was after running away from her own abusive husband. And after they caught her in the light, she went, okay, I'll tell you the truth. I'm a battered wife and I'm running away from my husband. And that's why I gave you a fake name and you can't find me in your system and all that stuff. Because she wasn't in the system.
Yeah.
And the FBI were basically just like, look, your daughters are safe. Everything's grand. Tell us who you are.
And then she couldn't say it.
Yeah.
She actually called for Philip to come in. And when he comes in, she's like, what do I say? He's like, just don't say anything. He's like, okay, there's something really weird is going on. Take him off into another room. And he say, what's your name? She's like, it's Alyssa. He's like, what's your name? And she couldn't say it. She hadn't said it in so many years.
Yeah.
And then I think at the same time, Philip was next door just fucking spilling the beans.
Yeah.
He was like, fuck it. Yeah.
So they knew.
They're
like,
my kids. That's JC Lee Dugard. My yeah. real name isn't really Phil. He pulls off a mask and it's Old Man Gunderson and he would have got away when I wasn't real kids.
Gunderson, you mean the guy who runs the fairgrounds?
Yeah.
What a way to catch kids, I guess.
Well, if I was a pedophile, yeah. I'd definitely run a fairground. So
blanket.
They go back in and they tell her and they say, yeah, no, he just confessed. You know, what's your name? She writes it because she couldn't say it. She wrote down JC Lee Dugard and her mother's name. And they took her from there and bing, bang, boom, popcorn.
In the documentary when she's actually talking herself, and she said, and I wrote out my name on the page, and it really looked like a child's writing because I hadn't written my name since I was 11.
Yeah.
She hadn't even practiced writing or writing her name.
But surely she knows what letters look like.
She doesn't write stuff down. Yeah, but I mean, like, if you're not practicing, I use a pen now and I look like Michael J. Fox.
Like
my writing looks fucked up, man. Do you know? Yeah. So, like, she obviously was writing this stuff down going, oh my God, this is scarlet now. People are going to be looking at this.
Doing letters backwards and orange crayon and stuff.
But that was it.
And like, who were these stick figures here?
She was so, like, conditioned.
Yeah.
It's not Stockholm syndrome. It's not a choice of her conditioned to go like, oh yeah, I love him and I'm going to protect him.
Yeah,
I'm afraid for my life.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to die if I say this stuff.
And at the end of it, she wasn't like, no, leave him alone. He's a good man. And he did. She was like, yeah, fuck, lock him up. Take him away. Now, the kids still call him dad. And she still refers to him as that and lets him keep the status. And I think that might be like a strength thing to sort of be like, yeah, he's still the father. I'm not going to deny what happened to me. And by saying he's not the father is denying a part of that. She's owning her shit. Like,
You know? And that's really, like, some of the interviews, some of the clips from the interviews she did, and you guys can look her up on YouTube. We're going to have a couple of clips of those videos up on VidMe, and I share them on the website and stuff like that, because I think they get taken down to go up on YouTube, so try them on VidMe. And some of them are just like, you're looking at her going, how can you still be like chirpy and normal?
And have a laugh and get your hair done and stuff.
Yeah, and you're like, at the same time you're going, there's loads, I mean, hundreds of thousands of women who go through rape, and I know we've been making light of it and having a joke and a laugh, but it's just to get the information out with a bit of sugar that helps the medicine go down.
Yeah.
Like, hundreds of thousands of women go through this every year and live their life and go on as if nothing had happened on the outside, and inside there's some serious shit going on that a lot of the times isn't really dealt with, you know. They don't call anybody, they don't talk to anybody, and it's kind of still vilified by society, and there's still that kind of a, you know, dirty towel kind of a bad attitude towards rape victims, and you're probably putting in for it.
That's a situation where you kind of need to really do away with their, like, they're a victim. No woman is asking to be raped, and I don't care what way they're dressed. No man has a right to put his hands on any woman, and vice versa.
Yeah,
you know.
Because the bouncers will come and they'll enjoy out.
Yeah.
No, it's just like it has to be acknowledged, like, how strong she is and how resilient her spirit is.
Yeah.
And if you watch like interviews of her, there's an interview from like 2011, I think, from 2020. And there's another one in 2016. And it's like streets ahead, JC Lee Dugard, from years of being like in therapy and doing all this stuff. And she's, to be honest, she's kind of more well-adjusted than a lot of people that you'd see on other channels.
And it seems like, like the whole situation,
like The Biggest Loser or on E or something like that.
Or anybody who's trying to fucking get on American Idol.
Yeah.
Like, seems to be more emotionally distraught than she is.
There is a thing now where she was denied the case to sue the state for culpability and sue the parole board for culpability and allowing Philip Garrido to be just out walking around in life, like kidnapping and fucking kids and whatever. But she was awarded $20 million as a kind of a, ooh, sorry about that.
Yep.
So she doesn't have to go and, you know, work in a 7-Eleven or whatever. What other job would you get from?
She could work in a printing office. She has that experience behind
seventh
her.
Grade education.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like Gord says here, it's incredible that she isn't just catatonic.
Yeah.
That she's a functioning person with receptionist experience. Like, it is,
stick
it
that
is,
on a CV.
Yeah, it is like demented.
Yeah.
It's demented how well adjusted she is. And I mean, it just goes to show, if anybody out there is going through any kind of trauma, be it like depression or any kind of psychological issues, or if you have been sexually assaulted or anything like that, like, go tell somebody, get help. There's loads of different organizations and stuff like that. We also talked about this during the Joseph Fritzl episode. Like, reach out, talk to somebody. Go do something. Don't live with it on your own. You know, I'm just trying to be positive now. Like, it's a serious topic, and I think that it definitely should be not ignored by
the amount of people.
We're in the society now, and it's kind of, it's like overzealously like, oh, your microaggressions are sexually assaulting me and stuff, and it's a bit too kind of boy who cried wolf stuff as well. But I mean, like, there is genuine situations where people need to be need to address what's going on.
And it seems like J.C. Lee has kind of said that what happened was a part of life. It wasn't her life.
Yeah.
It wasn't the whole thing. And this there's more to come. This is just a chapter.
Yeah, this isn't, this doesn't define me. Yeah. It's not me. It's something that happened to me. And that's a lot easier to to swallow, right? Sophie Jackson asks, are her kids in school now as functional humans? I guess we're functional humans all along. They just had a different kind of upbringing. But they seem to be living life as a normal enough family as much as they can. J.C. Lee is writing books and appearing different appearances and stuff like that. But you got 20 million smackers. Like, that's not going to go anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's a couple of lifetimes worth of money.
Exactly. For, and then she got book deals and interviews and stuff like that. Yeah. I don't know if her kids are in school. I'd imagine they would be.
I'm sure they're getting private tutelage. But like, if you were a kid who was locked up for ages and ages and you came out.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to be homeschooled. I think
you want to go out and with people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's videos of her driving, J.C. Lee driving around with the women from 2020 and her mates and stuff like that. And listening to like, Don't nobody gonna turn around and say goodbye. She's like, I love this song. It's like, okay. She's like, all the 80s are coming back now. This is my time.
Yeah.
So she's like a pig in shit now, I'd say, at the moment. Do you know, with all the 90s stuff coming back, she gets to live it for the first time. It's brilliant. So I think that's it for J.C. Dugard, Steve, right?
Yeah.
If anybody has anything they want to talk about with regard to the stuff that we talked about in the show, or if it's dredged up any dark memories, keep them to yourself. Don't email them to me. But if you do want to talk, there are numbers that you can reach out for, and we put those numbers for whatever country you're in out on the website. I'm sure listening to those conspiracy guys is not your first part to call, like, oh my God, I just be sexually assaulted. Oh, look, a show about J.C. Dugard. Yeah. Click. But if there's something knocking around there that you want to talk about, there are places that you need to go. Definitely do go and watch the interviews on 2020 or any interviews with J.C. Dugard, and just see the fucking beaming positivity that's coming out of somebody that had something so shit happen to her. It's inspiring. Like, it makes you not want to complain about some of whatever trifling bullshit's going on in your life.
Exactly. And I think that the sort of the snowflake stuff that's going on these days of people, as you say, Gordo, being, you know, your micro expressions are offending me. For someone to go through something proper, real, tangible shit for 18 years to make you decide if it's smiling, I think we all just need to fucking take a little bit of a chill pill when it comes to...
I do.
Comes to the little things.
I do. The lads online are making fun of me saying that... Those Conspiracy Guys podcast is on my trauma speed dial. You'd be surprised, lads, after a couple of the different shows, you'd be surprised at the emails that we get with the grim and harrowing private tales of stuff that's happened to people. And I'm looking at even people in the Discord server now that are making fun of me and have still sent emails going, oh my God, this fucking wild shit happened to me. Like, it's funny, but like, there is real people having real issues out there, and then they listen to this show and go like, I just throw it out there just for the crack. And they do, and I read them and I go, what do I do with this?
Like, I mean, not to sour your little brain at the moment, but like, when I was 12, I was very nearly molested by a man at a family function. He wasn't a relative or anything.
And you just didn't go that last 10. He went 90 and you didn't go 10.
No, he kind of nearly cornered me in the jacks. And he was kind of very complimentary and all that kind of stuff. Mm. And you're going to call me, made me memorize his number. But then I had to go to the toilet, and I went to the cubicle because I didn't want him anywhere near me. So I went into the cubicle. And when I came out of the cubicle, it was sort of an L-shaped bathroom. And he was right down the end of this little corridor.
Oh, man.
And he was at the urinal having a slash. And I managed to slip in behind him and stick it right up behind him and kind of got away. And he kind of turned and was talking to people while holding his dick. And his hands were not still. And he was like, you're going to call me, aren't you? I was like, Jesus. And I ran out and I went and I told my auntie. But the weird thing is, just before, maybe 15 minutes before, I really wanted to go to the toilet. And when I headed down, he got up as well and followed me down. And it was only that I stopped to talk to an uncle of mine. And I stopped and was turning, you know, to say, see ya. And I saw him coming down. And he stopped and turned around and walked off. So I kind of came very close now. I think
this is it. Like, when you're going to a wedding, most people just have, like, hooking up with somebody on their mind. So, like, you can't...
It wasn't. It was me communion.
Oh, right. Sorry.
I look nice in the suit. No, it was just a family funeral.
Micro brides.
Yeah. But it was, like, that kind of stuff. And that kind of stayed with me for years, that kind of stuff. And then you're always on guard. If anybody's like, hey, kid, I'm like, yeah, get away from me. Kind of a thing. Oh. But, I mean, you know.
Is that why you were so freaked out when I was...
Naked earlier on, cooking? Yeah.
That was... I didn't think, like, I don't know.
I appreciate you putting the apron on, but you didn't have to cut the front of it. You're basically just wearing a string.
At but the yeah. pocket of the apron is like an ancillary scrotum.
Yeah. But like, I had that situation and it was, I escaped it, obviously unscathed. Lucky, yeah. But it's always something that's like it's ingrained because your man looked like Mr. Burgess from The Snapper. But it's ingrained. But there's people who didn't get away from that kind of stuff. But today, if I was like 12 years old today and that happened, I'd be all over Twitter taking a picture of him.
Yeah, of course.
Ruin that person's life, yeah. Perhaps over a misunderstanding. He could have just been really friendly. You know, that kind of way. But today you'd be really sensitive to that kind of stuff. And he tried to touch me and there'd be, the newspapers would be there in 5 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But back in the day, I just kind of said it to my uncle. I think he tried to rape me. And then all of a sudden he...
Getting digs out in the car park.
Yeah, there's connections there.
Paul from Fake News wants to know, were you wearing sexy communion gear?
Yeah.
It was your own fault, so...
Yeah, exactly. I was wearing spats and a pink cummerbund.
Sophie Jackson wants to know, do you ever see molesters as victims of their own minds or just sick? I would say to you, Sophie, go and watch the documentary Louis Theroux, A Place for Pedophiles. And it details, in detail, the kind of aftercare these sex offenders are given when they're finished their custodial sentences, that because of local laws, they're not allowed out into normal, regular society. They have to go through this halfway house kind of situation. And
is that because of Megan's laws?
Yeah. And they're not allowed, like if they go out and live in the public, all the public has to agree within a certain area that they're allowed to live there and stuff like that. It's very hard to house these people. So they end up in kind of semi-permanent, like giant pedophile complex in the middle of Arizona where they all get fed and they all get
watered. Military-industrial complex.
It costs millions every year to run these fucking massive, like, it's like a ginormous shopping mall full of housed pedophiles, and they have their own little clubs and they have their own little thing, and very few of them get out to live it in real life. So there is like a massive amount of stuff that needs to or should be talked about it.
Yeah.
But we'll do it in other episodes as well.
Yeah, from one documentary I was watching, the one on Netflix actually, the parole officer was talking about Antioch, which is the place where Philip Garrido was living. He says that there's no schools around there and an awful lot of sex offenders move out there because of Megan's Law. They can't be near a school. So it kind of just pushes them into, so like Antioch.
It's like pedo ghettos.
Yeah.
And they end up then getting together and going, hey, what's the crack? Let's have a meeting and exchange tips and touch tips and do all that
have
stuff.
Have a lot of tips. Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's something that definitely, like there's something happening. There's something happening in the zeitgeist now where people are super, super hypersensitive to that stuff. And I think it's a good thing that, it, there's not people getting falsely accused, but there are, you know, like the Pizzagate stuff and all that stuff. Like it's in the zeitgeist, and there's big rings. There's some worldwide fucking shit happening, and that stuff needs to be stopped. In general, it definitely needs to be stopped.
Because it seems like everything in the world is sort of permitted, but fucking kids is wrong.
Yeah.
And that's universally wrong. That's the one thing like you can't really come back from.
But it's something that hasn't been talked about in public or has allowed to be talked about for years and years and years. So highly, highly taboo. We're doing a show and we're joking about it. Like this kind of stuff, people shouldn't be so sensitive that they can't talk or joke about it, because then it won't be talked about and then people won't know.
Yeah.
And then kids keep on getting fucked, and it has to stop. Like, even like you're saying, you're like traumatized by somebody even starting to do that stuff. Mm. Like it's a big deal and it's too big for this little small episode, but, we'll definitely talk about it again in future.
And even if it is just joking, at least we're talking about it. At least it's kind of keeping that plate spinning.
Brennan, last comments then. Brendan says, check out The Keepers on Netflix. And Paul says, 1980s Tories weren't pedos, were they? And Gar says, good episode, guys. Thanks very much. So that's it for this time on Those Conspiracy Guys. That's been J.C. Lee Dugard et al. Loads of different discussions. That's what the true crime episodes are going to be like from now on. We've been live on Discord server for the Patreon folks. So if you want to get live and ask some questions and maybe have some comments on the next show, head over to patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys and donate some dollar bills, y'all. You'll be supporting the show, making everything better, including your experience of what we're doing over here. Thanks to everybody who joined us in the Discord server.
Thank you very much.
Christine, Freddie Jane, Gord, Brennan, Paul, Sebastian, Sophie Jackson with loads of questions. And that's it for this time. If anything comes up on the show that, you know, tickles your, I want to ask you a question, Bowen. At T Conspiracy Guys on Twitter. We're Those Conspiracy Guys on Facebook. info@thoseconspiracyguys is the email. And if you want to tell Steve how great and funny he is, it's @LanceHandsome.
Yes, indeed.
On Twitter. I'd like to say thanks very much to Steve for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
True Crime Show. You've also heard this on Spin FM. So if you heard us on the radio, hit us up on Twitter and let us know where you found us. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Thanks to the guys in the live show. This has been Those Conspiracy Guys. Good luck. Goodbye.